I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times.
On immigration policy, America First means protecting the jobs, wages, and security of American workers. Whether first or 10th generation, no matter who you are, we're going to protect your job. Because let me tell you, our jobs are being stripped from our country like we're babies.
That was candidate Donald Trump in June 2016 at the Trump National Golf Club in Westchester, New York, after winning the Republican primary for president. Working at the club at that time were a number of undocumented immigrants, some of them longtime employees who would use false ID papers to get the job. Our guest, Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post reporter David Farenthold, wrote a story this weekend about how more than a dozen of these workers were fired earlier this month in the midst of the government shutdown and the president's demand for a wall because of the threat of undocumented immigrants. Many of these workers claim that the club looked the other way when it came to their legal status. And this morning, the paper reports that the Trump Organization is going to institute the E-Verify system at all of their properties to ensure that the people they hire are eligible to work, something Trump had said the company was doing all along. David Farenthold has been covering President Trump's businesses and conflicts of interest and joins us once again on Radio Times. David Farenthold, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you for having me on.
You wrote just a couple of days ago, unlike several other golf courses in New York, the Trump Westchester Club does not use E-Verify. Eric Trump did not respond to a question about whether or when it would start. Seems like you got the answer to your question.
Yes, you're right. So all along, when President Trump, as you said, had been making immigration and the crisis of illegal immigration the centerpiece of his campaign, the centerpiece of his presidency, his golf courses weren't even sort of taking the most readily available step to ensure that they were not contributing to that problem by hiring and employing illegal workers. Now, after all this publicity, they're going to do that.
And you think you wrote a story, the New York Times wrote a story. You think the publicity in your reporting made a difference?
Well, it seems that the New York Times story back in December was what first alerted the world to the fact that the Trump org employed illegal workers. That Times story talked about a couple of undocumented workers at Bedminster, the Trump golf club in New Jersey that he goes often to. That seems to have set off within the Trump organization a purge of undocumented workers. That New York Times story, I think, led to the firings that we covered at Westchester. And then the publicity for that seems to have pushed them to now kind of do what, as you said, Donald Trump had always claimed they were doing all along, which is enroll in E-Verify.
Tell us what happened, and you covered the club in Westchester, New York. This goes back to January 18th. These were the people working there. They were undocumented. They had false ID papers. What happened? How were they fired?
So these were people who were, as you said, longtime employees. They were kind of the backbone of the club. So in the wintertime, the golf club staff shrinks from close to 100 down to just 20 or so. And about half of that 20 were undocumented immigrants. So that shows you how important they were to the operations of the club. They were called in about 10 o'clock in the morning. They're all there just drinking their coffee, getting ready for work. And they're told, okay, all of you have to go to a meeting with HR, but you don't go in all together. Go in one by one. And the first guy goes up there, meets the vice president of human resources for the whole Trump organization. She doesn't speak Spanish, so she's reading from a script in English. It's translated by another person who's called in on the phone. She says, you know, we've reviewed your documents. We found them to be not genuine. Are you here legally? And the guy says, no. And I should add, the documents they reviewed were the documents he had submitted when he was hired to the Trump organization more than 10 years ago. So they'd been on file this whole time. We reviewed your documents. We found them to be not genuine. You know, he admits that he is not here legally. Right. She says, you have to be fired. He breaks out into tears because this is his whole life. This is the place he's worked for most of his time in the U.S. He comes down and tells the rest of them, many of them, you know, even now knowing what's coming, go up one by one to be fired.
You looked at some of these documents. How real do they look?
I am a bad judge of this. I don't spend my days looking at Social Security cards.
I got it. Right. But you know what yours looks like.
Yeah, and so they're convincing. Now, you know, the thing about this is, like, if you're an employer, there are systems that go beyond just looking at it, right? There are ways, if you're interested, to really check the numbers and make sure they match. And even if you don't check on the front end, if you employ somebody with a bad Social Security number and pay them, put in payroll taxes under that bad Social Security number, you'll actually get things back from the IRS and Social Security saying, look, you have an employee whose Social Security doesn't match. see if you can talk to them and try to fix that problem. So even if you miss it on the front end, there are other systems that might alert you to this.
Do we know whether there were alerts that were ignored? And do we know whether either a businessman or candidate or President Trump knew there were undocumented workers at his golf club?
We don't know if there were records that were, if there were letters that were ignored. It seems possible, given that how many undocumented employees they employed there, but we don't know for sure. As the question of what Donald Trump knew, it's really hard to tell. Certainly people at his golf club, the workers that work there say, look, the people who are our bosses at the golf club had to have known, both because in some cases the workers say they were told by the bosses at Trump Org, your fakes are not good enough, go get a better fake. But in other cases, they were treated in a way that shows that there was an internal division within Trump Org where people understood who these people were. They didn't get benefits. They couldn't advance in their jobs. They were a second tier of employees divided only by their immigration status. So if Trump Org didn't know, how did it know to divide them?
Well, let me quote you, David Farenthold. You write, but in Westchester County, Trump seemed to have benefited from the same dynamic he denounces. His undocumented workers said they provided Trump with cheap labor. In return, they got steady work and few questions. And I have to say, based on the interviews that you did with some of these workers, it seems as if in many ways they were treated quite well. There was one person who I think had access or keys to Eric Trump's house, so obviously a trusted employee. Others talked about, you know, large tips coming from Donald Trump.
That's right. They did feel they resented this inability to advance in their jobs. They felt like they were, you know, second class citizens. But that was, you know, they understood that to be the bargain. That was what you did if you were an undocumented worker. You accepted that kind of limitation on your job. Within those limitations, they were quite happy at this golf club. They felt part of the family. They were invited to sort of employee parties on the 4th of July. They got tips from Donald Trump. They felt very comfortable and happy there. It's a contrast to what you hear sometimes from undocumented employees at Bedminster, who felt poorly treated, sort of menaced because of their immigration status. At Westchester, these folks were very happy, given the bounds of what an illegal employee can expect.
Use the word cheap labor. Were they paid below, let's say, minimum wage?
They were not paid below minimum wage. They were paid, it appears from looking at labor statistics from that area of New York, that they were paid sort of on the low end of employees in the landscaping business and the housekeeping business. But no, they were not paid below minimum wage.
You also talked to two former managers, unnamed, about what they observed. What did they tell you?
One of them told us, you know, look, when we hired people, we submitted their immigration documents to the accounting department at the club, and the accounting department would kick back people whose documents they felt were not genuine. So that this one manager estimated that was about 20% of all the hires they submitted, but everybody else they accepted. So it shows you there was some kind of check, but a check that still permitted a lot of undocumented employees to get through. Another manager told us, you know, I asked this manager, did Trump Org, were they sending signals from the top, we really care about this? You know, this is something that matters to us. We don't want to employ undocumented immigrants. We think it's immoral to employ undocumented immigrants. And this manager said no. I mean, that was the furthest thing. We never got that signal from them. The signal we got from them over and over again was make your payroll, lower your costs. And so, you know, if there was no sense that undocumented employees really mattered, what mattered was cheap labor, then we looked for cheap labor and sort of turned a blind eye. This manager's description was, don't ask, don't tell.
Right, which we know from military days. Now, how many people at this particular club in New York have then lost their jobs as a result of their immigration status?
About 12 we know of so far.
And they talked to you because their lawyer contacted you, is that correct?
Their lawyer, so this is the same lawyer who represents some of the employees fired at Bedminster. Their lawyer contacted us and described kind of their situation. We went up to Westchester County, me and another reporter, and sort of introduced ourselves. So these workers described what it would mean to appear in the newspaper, you know, the possible upside and downside, and gave them a day to think about it. And we thought, you know, we didn't have any idea if any of them would want to take the risk and go on the record. When we came back 2 days later, there were 14 people in the room. They all wanted to tell their story. I think their hope is that by getting publicity for themselves, they can maybe avoid the risk that they'll be sort of deported and switch under the rug.
Well, and not the greatest phone line, I have to say, to our listeners, but we will carry on in the next couple of minutes. David, we have their names, and in many ways we have their photographs as well. So we know who these people are.
That's right. They're hoping that there is some sort of
there are visas available for people who are witnesses in federal investigations. There are visas available for people who are victims of crimes. There are lawyers hoping that some federal or state investigation will begin that will give them legal status just to keep them as witnesses.
I was reading they're interested in talking to members of Congress, or perhaps they already have done that, or maybe even testifying. Is there news on that front?
Yes, they've been on Capitol Hill this week talking to Democratic members of Congress. There is some interest in the House Judiciary Committee and in other committees in starting an investigation or pressing the FBI to do an investigation of Trump Org and its immigration practices. That hasn't happened yet, but there is some pressure on Capitol Hill.
Now, Trump Org, as you write, is still owned by Donald Trump, run by his sons, Donald Jr. and Eric, correct?
That's right. Trump Sr., the president, owns his company, but he does not manage it day to day, as far as we know.
And is he making money off his clubs?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, the money that goes to his clubs is his money, as the president's money, and he can withdraw money from it goes into a trust, which he owns, and he can withdraw money from that trust at any time. So effectively, he owns them the same as he did before.
And did the White House respond in any way to your reporting?
No. We sent them questions before our story came out. They didn't respond. There was a question asked at the White House briefing, I believe it was yesterday, mm-hmm. of Sarah Sanders, the White House press secretary, and her response was, you know, basically a non-response. There was no explanation of why this whole time that President Trump was casting immigration and the hiring of illegal immigrants as a moral issue, that he wasn't sort of taking that to heart in his own business.
Are you going to continue to follow up on this story?
Absolutely. My biggest question now is whether other Trump golf clubs have also been purging undocumented workers. So we're looking for signs of that now, including one of the ones we're looking at is in the Philadelphia area in Pine Hill, New Jersey, right across the river.
And looking to see whether they are doing what these other clubs have already started doing.
Right. Those clubs, including the one in Pine Hill, were not enrolled in the E-Verify program before. So they look demographically and in the way they're organized very similar to Bedminster and Westchester. So we're trying to see if there's a chance that they had a similar number of undocumented workers who might now be fired.
Is the Trump Organization in trouble?
Well, the one sign of that is in New Jersey. After the women came forward in Bedminster to say they were undocumented and people were fired there, the New Jersey Attorney General's office appears to have taken an interest in that case. That hasn't produced charges. I can't tell you that will ever produce charges. That seems to be the closest thing to legal trouble for the Trump Org out of this.
Well, we're going to leave it there. David Ferenthal, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And he is a Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post reporter. He's been covering President Trump's businesses and conflicts of interest. And we did post his story on our Facebook page about undocumented workers both being hired and fired at the National Golf Club in Westchester, New York, the Trump National Golf Club in Westchester, New York. After this very short break, we'll be talking about what this tells us about the hiring of undocumented workers in America and the role, the responsibility of employers and also the responsibility of workers as well. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We were just talking about the Trump Organization hiring and now firing undocumented immigrants at their golf clubs in New York and New Jersey, plus the announcement that the company was going to institute the E-Verify system to ensure that the people they hire are in the country legally. It should be noted that President Trump previously claimed that his company used E-Verify, and apparently that is not true. All this raises questions about how common it is for employers to hire workers without proper identification. The Department of Homeland Security estimates that there are about 12 million undocumented immigrants living in the country, and it's estimated that about 8 million of them have jobs. That's according to the Pew Research Center. Joining us is David Leopold. He's chair of immigration law at Ulmer and Byrne. That's a law firm in Cleveland, Ohio. David Leopold, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us is Alex Narasta, and he's senior immigration policy analyst at the Cato Institute. Alex, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. Alex, let me begin with you. We were just talking about the Trump golf clubs, two of them, one in New Jersey and New York, hiring undocumented immigrants. Is the Trump Organization an outlier, or does this give us a window into how business is done in this country? You want to add anything to that, David?
Well, look, let's be really clear about what's been coming out in the Washington Post and the New York Times and elsewhere, and that's that the president, Donald Trump, has based his entire business and political life on what we see now as a lie. What we see here, which is an outlier, I agree with what Alex said, but what we see here that's different is that the president and his family have perpetrated a multi-state criminal conspiracy, which involves immigration fraud, which involves forced labor, which involves coercion. That is the difference here. Yes, we have a national problem. We need to bring 11 million out of the shadows because we know many of them are working. We know that many of them are working without authorization. But what we see here with respect to the Trump Organization is a multi-state conspiracy, and that is very serious.
Let me quote something that David Farenthold wrote in the Washington Post, and he said, and I quoted this earlier, but I just want to give you a chance, David Leopold, to respond to that. He's talking about this Westchester Club. Trump seems to have benefited from the same dynamic he denounces. His undocumented workers say that they provided Trump with cheap labor. In return, they got steady work and few questions. And it seems that it's kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge relationship here.
Right, and that part of it is something that is not unique to the Trump Organization. That is something that we need to solve, and the only way to solve this is through a comprehensive, full immigration reform, which takes the 11 million hard workers, honest workers, family people out of the shadows, and brings them away from this exploitation. Away from this cheap labor, and it also obviously protects the wages and working conditions of U.S. workers. But let's be really clear: what we're seeing going on with the Trump Organization goes a step beyond what you normally see with employers, and we have a conspiracy, a multi-state criminal conspiracy that's coming out.
Let me play a clip from 2016. This is candidate Trump being interviewed by Chris Matthews, and this has to do with questions about E-Verify.
What are we going to do about illegal hiring? Because the Republicans joined the Democrats and said in that bill a couple of years ago, we're going to stop illegal hiring.
Well,
because
that's the magnet. That with E-Verify and with the various
methods. Oh, are you for it?
I'm for it. I use it.
What should be the punishment for hiring someone? What should be the punishment for being really?
You can be.
You're collaborating with an illegal immigrant.
Sure. You can be very, very strong. It could be a huge financial penalty. It could be beyond.
Why don't these guys in your party pass it? Why don't they ever pass it?
They don't want it.
Well, they don't believe in it.
No. Some of them do. Some of them believe in it very strongly. Others don't. You know, I'm using E-Verify on just about every job at Doral. I'm using it, but I'm using it on the building, the old post office on Pennsylvania Avenue that I'm building into what will soon be a phenomenal hotel.
But isn't
Alex, let me go back to you. He's saying, this was 2016, that he uses E-Verify, and he certainly didn't use E-Verify at his golf club.
He certainly didn't. But I just want to emphasize that E-Verify is not a very effective program to begin with. According to a program or an audit done by the company Westat, about 54% of illegal immigrants run through E-Verify, get approved as legal workers, and that's across the board, across the states. The state of Arizona mandated E-Verify for all new hires in 2008, and what they found is that it did slightly diminish the wages of illegal immigrant workers there, but the wage decrease was very small compared to the promises that the supporters of E-Verify made.
Is it a technical problem or a problem of will?
It's a problem of design, and it's an economic incentive problem, not an engineering problem. I mean, to really close this loop, we need to understand how E-Verify works, right? If I'm an illegal immigrant and I hand them your identification, then the system approves that, and then I get the job. Now, if the only way to really try to close this loop is to give every single American worker and every legal worker a biometric identity system that can be checked against government databases, and nobody really wants that. When the idea was mentioned to Ronald Reagan to do this, he sarcastically said, "Why don't we brand all the babies at birth?"
Wow. Wow. Let me read an email from Neil, and David, I'll give you a chance to respond to it. He says, if unauthorized immigrants are supposedly so harmful to the country, why doesn't the Trump administration declare something like an employment emergency and then prosecute employers who hire them? And again, it does feel as if we have this kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge system that that perhaps is getting exposed.
Well, look, what you have going on here is a two-tiered system in this country. We have the U.S. workers, which are amenable to benefits, which those laws that protect them. And then we all know that there's an underclass of workers who are not documented. And what we have to do is decide that this ends. We've got to bring people out of the shadows. This is more of a labor issue. This is a criminal issue right now. But it's a social issue. We cannot continue. We cannot continue on a two-tiered system. And that's what, one is an underclass, that's the undocumented worker, indentured servitude, living in the shadows, subject to exploitation, subject to the kind of abuse that we've seen in the allegations being reported in the Washington Post and the New York Times about what's been going on at the Trump Organization. And the only way to fix this is to get real, to understand and to admit that this is going on, to bring everybody out, as people have been talking about for years. But this is a unique opportunity, I think. Right now is a unique opportunity because you have the irony of the president of the United States who has been shut down the government, held the country hostage over his wall. And the real wall, honestly, ought to be built around, as we see, Bedminster, Trump's Bedminster Golf Club and his Westchester Golf Club. The point being that the problem is internal. It is not external. We do not have a problem with people coming in undocumented at the border. We are at levels not seen since the 70s. Where we do have a problem is that we are treating, and we have all been complicit in this, in a sense, of living in a system where there's a conspiracy of silence over the fact that undocumented workers are working all over the country, and nobody says everything. Nod, nod, wink, wink, turn the other way. And what we've seen now is that, yes, even the president of the United States uses cheap undocumented labor. He does it. He abuses them. He's engaged in a multi-state criminal conspiracy, which needs to be investigated by Congress. These people need protection so that they can come out of the shadow, which is very important. People like the brave folks that have come out at Bedminster, the golf club, the Trump golf club at Bedminster, Trump golf club in Westchester County, New York, those folks need protection. Because if they're deported before they can give testimony, before they can speak, and we have what looks like obstruction of justice, and we need to signal to other undocumented workers across the country that to speak out, to stand up for your rights, that you don't have to take abuse, that you can come out of the shadows, and that our country will protect you. And there's mechanisms in the law, whether it's deferred action, whether it's the use of U visas, which protects victims of crime, or even S visas or trafficking visas, T visas. We have mechanisms in the law to protect the undocumented workers and other victims of multi-state criminal activities.
Okay, let me jump in because I want to give Alex a chance to respond to some of the things you said, including David Leopold saying we're looking at or dealing with a multi-state criminal conspiracy. Do you see it that way, Alex?
Well, I'm not a criminal lawyer, and I have no comment specifically on that. But I do want to say that I agree with the sense that we need to definitely legalize the vast majority of these people. The evidence is pretty clear economically that illegal immigrant workers make about 11% lower wages than American workers who have the same levels of education, same levels of experience, and that's entirely due to their illegal status. See, from the perspective of the employer, it is a little risky legally to hire an illegal immigrant worker. They have the possibility of employer sanctions, of being prosecuted by the federal government, and having to pay some fines. Now, it's a pretty low chance, but it does exist. So the way that this bargain works is that the unauthorized or illegal immigrant will get a lower wage, and that sort of protects the employer from the legal risks of doing so. And then on the other side, employers also face the possibility of being sued if they ask too many questions. So due to equal employment opportunity laws, if you go into too much detail about people's legal status, or you ask too much about their documents, and you maybe don't hire them as a result of that, sometimes people get sued. For that. So basically, if you ask too many questions, you can get sued for violating people's rights under law to equal employment. But then if you ask too few questions, you can get in trouble by the federal government for not trying to enforce their immigration laws for them.
Alex, let me ask you, if someone who is undocumented is having their taxes taken out of their pay stub or their pay, their Social Security taken out of that, I'm assuming if they stay here long enough, they cannot collect it. Are they a drag on our budget, or are they an asset to our budget?
So they do not have access to those benefits, Social Security or Medicare, no matter how much they pay into the United States government. Now, the amount of evidence that we have about the fiscal effects of immigration across the board is that it either pays for itself, or it's a long-term sort of moderate but net benefit to the United States budget. Now, illegal immigrant workers are probably more positive than most other immigrants because they just don't have access to means-tested welfare benefits, they don't have access to entitlement programs, and they're much more likely to work than even legal immigrants. So to give you an example, illegal immigrant men have an 85% labor force participation rate compared to 74% for native-born American men.
Very interesting. Let me go back to you, David Leopold. And you mentioned the fact that you're concerned that these undocumented workers who have come forward are going to pay a price. What, are you worried about deportation, for instance?
Well, of course. You have a situation where they've come out with some very serious allegations, credible testimony, detailed testimony, criminal activity, multi-state criminal activity within the Trump organization at the golf clubs in New Jersey and in New York. Of course, they're amenable to deportation, and they need to be protected. Congress needs to investigate this thoroughly. The appropriate federal authorities and in New Jersey and New York state authorities need to look at crimes that have been committed by the Trump organization. Let me be really clear.
Okay.
You know, the term illegal worker or illegal immigrant is a term that's thrown out there. But I'm going to be really clear about something. It is not illegal to work in the United States. It is illegal. It is a crime to knowingly hire somebody knowing that they're undocumented. The victims here are the immigrant workers. The victims are the immigrant workers. They have been victims of abuse. They have been victims of forced labor. They have been coerced. We have evidence that Victorina Morales was told she would be deported, that she was abused by supervisors. That was one of the women that worked at the Minister Golf Club. I mean, these stories that have come out in the Washington Post and the New York Times are harrowing. And they would be shocking enough if it were some random employer somewhere in the United States, that it's the president of the United States and the company that he still owns, operated by his two sons, Eric and Don Jr. And Eric, of course, is now tweeting about defensively about E-Verify and all this kind of stuff is beyond shocking. It's just there's no words. It's foul. It's disgusting, especially when he has built his political career on the backs of demeaning immigrants, calling them rapists, calling them criminals, and now we see who the real criminal is.
Well, Alex, let me go back to you. And David just said, it's not illegal to work as an undocumented worker in the United States, but it's illegal to hire them. But not so long ago, it was legal to hire undocumented workers. Can you explain that?
Yeah, prior to 1986, Reagan amnesty becoming law, there was nothing illegal. There was nothing against the law in the United States for an employer to hire an illegal immigrant worker here. It was really as part of that compromise, that amnesty for over 3 million illegal immigrants, that they created the I-9 system. So every time you or I or anybody else in the United States gets a job, we have to fill out this I-9 form. It provides some documentation, some identification to show our employer that we are legally allowed to work in the United States. And almost all the time, these papers sit in some file somewhere, and they get destroyed after a few decades, and almost nobody checks up on them. But it's sort of to check the box type system to make politicians, to make employers, to make workers feel like there's some kind of compliance with this law. But the big problem is that these laws are basically unenforceable on the books the way that they are right now. Well, we have a very restrictive legal immigration system that makes it almost impossible for the vast majority of legal workers to come here lawfully, immigrant workers come here lawfully and to work legally in the United States. The predictable result is a large black market, and forms like the I-9 and systems like E-Verify really won't solve these problems. We need to fix the economic incentives, not the legal system or the engineering problems.
Well, let's pick up on that after this very short break. That's Alex Narasta of the Cato Institute, immigration lawyer David Leopold with us as well. What are your thoughts? 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with David Leopold. He's chair of immigration law at Ulmer and Byrne, which is located in Cleveland. He's past president of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Also with us, Alex Narasta, and he's senior immigration policy analyst at the Cato Institute. We are talking about revelations of undocumented workers working at some Trump-owned golf clubs, and also the questions it raises about immigration policy and the fact that there are many people essentially working under the table in this country. And again, you can join us. Questions or comments, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. David, I hear what you are calling for, but I'm also reminded that we don't seem to be able to come up with an immigration policy that addresses the fact that there are 11 to 12 million undocumented immigrants living in this country, many of them working. And do you see a way forward that the country can really rally around?
Yeah, I do see a way forward. First of all, the American people, by and large, support it. The numbers show that a vast majority of the American people, voting public in general, support a comprehensive immigration reform, which includes a pathway to green card and citizenship for the undocumented. We also have seen what the president has actually ironically shown us with these reports in the Washington Post and the New York Times, is that we need immigration reform in this country. We need a pathway to citizenship for the undocumented workers. The problem is not at the border. The problem is not building some sort of a monument to the president's nativism at the border, or what he calls a wall. The problem is internally. And we have a system that we have a two-tiered system, as we've discussed. What we need is a political will in Congress on both sides of the aisle, frankly, to roll up some sleeves, get to work, and put together a bill, a comprehensive bill, which takes care of this issue once and for all, and brings folks out of the shadows. Otherwise, we are deciding to live in a country in 2019 mm-hmm. and beyond, which approves of a permanent underclass of people who are paid less and who have less benefits and who are subject to abuse. And that's the immigrant population.
Let me turn to you, Alex. And as we are talking, the White House and Congress trying to come up with some kind of plan to keep the government open, dealing with this question about the wall or border security, what do you make of this kind of conundrum that we are in and that we can't seem to solve this problem, and now we are so focused on this wall?
Well, the wall might have had an impact on immigration, illegal immigration to the United States 15, 20, maybe 30 years ago. It might have slowed down or stopped the small percentage of it back then. But we're really fighting the problems of previous generations. I mean, I'm from California. I remember the debate over Prop 187 and illegal immigration in the mid-1990s and how much that transformed the state. It seems like, in a way, we're having a Californification of the sort of national political debate in this way, focusing, however, not on the issues that are going on, but issues that happened 15, 20 years ago that we just can't solve right now. I mean, the big problem, and I fundamentally agree with a lot of what David is saying on this, is we need to find a way to not just legalize the illegal immigrant workers here, but the most important component is legalizing future flow, making it easier for low-skilled workers, for mid-skilled workers, high-skilled workers of any kind, entrepreneurs, etc., immigrants, family members, to come to this country legally, to come here and work if they want to work above board, to pay their taxes. And if we fix that problem, then we can put people like me out of a job forever, and then we don't ever have to revisit this issue. And that was the major problem with the Reagan amnesty in 86. It legalized people. It increased border security tremendously. It increased interior enforcement. What it did not do was increase the flow of legal migrant and immigrant workers into the United States. And that's why we've been dealing with this problem for longer than I've been alive.
David, I know you have to leave us in a couple of minutes, but do you think punishing employers who hire undocumented immigrants, is that a way forward?
Well, when you have a bad actor employer like the Trump Organization that simply thumbs its nose at the law and engages in a criminal conspiracy over two states, possibly more, yes, we need investigations and appropriate justice. I mean, that's what has to happen. This is a country of the rule of law. And, you know, Alex is absolutely correct. Going forward, we need a well-designated, a well-thought-through temporary worker program. And that was a problem with the Reagan amnesty. We also need to understand that, you know, immigrants, by and large, help create jobs in this country. We have immigrants who come in, you know, who work hard in the fields, who work hard in construction. We also have immigrants at the other end who are bringing in, you know, businesses, entrepreneurs, job creators, and we need to think through the fact that those folks ought to be welcomed as well. And under this administration, it's anything but. And we need to first get out of an administration, the Trump administration, the mindset of people like Stephen Miller, an anti-immigrant extremist who works in the White House, senior advisor, that kind of, you know, closed the door to the country for everybody. Stop legal immigration, stop any kind of immigration to the United States, close the door and put a close for business sign on the Statue of Liberty. That is not going to help the United States into the future. It's not going to help the United States compete in the global economy. It just doesn't work. It's pure nativist, anti-immigrant view.
Well, I know you have to leave us, David Leopold. Thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. And again, past president of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, Alex Narasa, staying with us for the rest of the hour. Alex, here's an anonymous comment. A lot of small businesses pay their employees under the table in cash. That isn't always an indicator that the employees are undocumented. But what I hear from you and even some of this reporting is that the undocumented workers working, for instance, at these two Trump golf clubs, they were paid over the table. They were not paid under the table. They were paid and Social Security taken out, taxes taken out.
That's right, and there's a number of ways that employers can do this. One is that the illegal immigrant worker gives them somebody else's identification, somebody else's social security number. Oftentimes, these are numbers that are stolen, but oftentimes, and this is, seems to be increasingly common, they're sort of borrowed, they're lent to the illegal immigrant worker by somebody else voluntarily, like whether it be a family member or a friend or somebody else who's legally able to work will let their friend who's an illegal immigrant or family member use their identity information in order to get a job. Another way to get around it is to basically work as an independent contractor. Working as an independent contractor, in many cases, the person hiring you is not technically your employer, so they don't have to run these background checks, these I-9 checks, in order to employ you. And another way is the IRS, because the IRS only cares about collecting our hard-earned pay, is they give a lot of workers a sort of tax ID number that can be used to pay taxes, isn't supposed to be used for employment authorization, but is used on the tax front so that they're able to file their tax forms and comply with the rules that way. So there's a large number of taxpayers who have tax ID numbers given to them by the IRS who are almost guaranteed to be illegal immigrants who are working, but they're also paying their taxes. And it's important just to reemphasize, they don't have any claims on these benefits going forward. Right. They don't have claims on Social Security. They don't have claims on Medicare. They don't have claims on any of these future or current welfare programs. But it's estimated that between about 55 and 75% of illegal immigrant workers either get their Social Security money deducted from their paychecks and or file their federal income tax forms.
I mean, it sounds like there's both an underground market and an above ground market when it comes to these documents and how to, in a sense, game the system.
Oh, that's absolutely the way it is. I mean, the reason why I think it's very popular for people to talk about increasing immigration enforcement and trying to crack down on businesses is that everybody knows that it's really not going to happen. It's very easy to say, like, we're going to have E-Verify at every business. Every business is going to check every employer and every employee hired, and none of them are going to be able to get a job. But when we take a look at it, when it's actually enforced in states like Arizona, a state known for enforcing immigration laws. In Arizona, if you knowingly or intentionally hire an illegal immigrant on your second offense, your business can be shut down legally in the state.
Wow.
But since 2008, they have used that business death penalty three times, all of them against businesses that were already bankrupt and shut down. Now, if Arizona is not going to enforce these laws against employers, what hope is there for California or Illinois or the federal government to do the same? The reason why people can say they're in favor of E-Verify is because the system doesn't work, and even when it's put in place, nobody wants to enforce it because nobody wants to be the politician who stands up and say, yes, I proudly shut down thousands of small businesses in my district.
Let me get you to talk about something that you wrote in the Cato Institute, the case for an immigration tariff, how to create a price-based visa category, which I think is connected to what we are talking about. But you're looking at both undocumented and documented immigrants. And as we know, that most people who are here illegally have overstayed their visas. But what are you proposing here?
So the idea is to take a look at the current legal immigration system, and most of it is based off very high fees, numerical caps, numerical quotas based on the country that people are from, but also based on their skills and education. My idea is sort of to use my training and background in economics and to copy a lot of the work by other economists and to basically say, let's just create another visa category. And what we do is we just sell work permits, and we sell them to people based, you know, we set a price based on their age and education. So if they're younger and more educated, we charge a lower price. If they're a little bit older, less educated, we charge them maybe a higher price to come here. And we allow people to work and live, and we get rid of the rest of this massive bureaucracy of complex rules. The immigration law is second in complexity only to the income tax. And I think if we have a simplification like that, a system like that, you can drive most future illegal immigrants who would otherwise come into a legal market to come here to work.
Do we need immigrants working in this country?
Oh, absolutely. I think the market is pretty clear on that. I mean, as Americans and American businesses, we demand the goods and services made by immigrants as well as those made by native-born Americans. The fact that we have such a large illegal immigrant black market population is evidence that the laws just are not allowing enough legal immigration to satisfy our demands as consumers and as employers and as investors and as workers. I mean, when I go to the store, I stop for the best products at the lower prices. And frequently, not always, but frequently a lot of those are made by immigrants in the United States and some of them undocumented immigrants. I'm not going to check every worker's papers. Hmm. I'm not going to learn what identity documents are fake or not. What I'm going to do is buy the best products. And hundreds of millions of people agree with me. They don't necessarily care about these issues. But what we do care about and what bothers me is that we have such a large black market. The way to fix that is not with more enforcement or punishing employers or punishing workers, but legalizing it.
But legalizing it. I'm curious about what sectors of the American economy you think are more dependent on undocumented workers than other parts of the economy.
So some of the big ones are business services. So, for instance, about 22% of illegal immigrants work in business services. 18% work in leisure activities, you know, like these golf clubs, Trump golf clubs that we've mentioned, other types of activities. 16% work in construction. Construction is just a huge industry across. I mean, where I grew up in the Southwest and in the United States and California, I mean, you go to every construction site, and this is a stereotype, but people are talking in Spanish. You basically need to learn Spanish to get along in some of these occupations. And so it's a very, very important part of that. And in agriculture, some estimates are that about 90% of people who work in crop production, that is, they're on the ground, they're picking crops, they're planting crops, about 90% of those people are illegal immigrant workers, while 5% of all illegal immigrants work just in any kind of agricultural profession. So these are ones that are generally pretty dependent on unlawful immigrants.
You said 90% of agricultural workers are probably undocumented?
Those who are specifically in crop production. These are the people who, like, pick crops, who plant them directly. There are lots of people who work in agriculture who aren't, who, say, like, drive tractors, who work in sort of distribution systems, who work in other types of areas. But those who are sort of that you see in the fields day to day, working with fruit and vegetables, picking, moving, boxing them, it's estimated that about 90% of those folks are up to about 90% of those folks are illegal immigrant workers. Some estimates are as low as 50 to 70%, but we're talking about at least half of them.
At least half of them. What do you think about ICE? And Philadelphia is a sanctuary city. There are other sanctuary cities in the country as well. What do you think about ICE essentially raiding organizations or companies or even homes and deporting undocumented immigrants?
I think ICE should focus 100% of its activities on identifying and deporting unlawful immigrants who are also violent and property criminals. I think every single second and every dollar they spend trying to track down an illegal immigrant worker or business owner or a member of a family who hasn't committed another crime, hasn't committed another offense, hasn't hurt or violated the rights of anybody else is a dollar or minute that is wasted. Illegal immigrants are less likely to commit crimes than native-born Americans. They're less likely to be convicted. They're less likely to be incarcerated with them. But you have a large population, you know, between about 10.5 and 12 million illegal immigrants. Some of them are bad apples. And I think that ICE should focus 100% on those folks and not waste a single moment going after people who are not violent and property criminals.
Alex, we're almost out of time here. Do you think any of the things we talked about are going to happen in the next either weeks, months, or even years?
Well, I'm a long-term pessimist. Long-term optimist, short-run pessimist.
Okay.
Politics right now is pretty fractured here in Washington, D.C., where I work and live in this topic. But I do think there's always sort of a big, large number of people in both parties who are reasonable, who want to get things done. It's just trying to find that particular mix and formula to do it. But in the long run, I think we're absolutely going to solve this problem. We have a tradition in this country of being open to immigration, of allowing large number of legal immigrants. I think it's just a matter of time before we return to that.
Well, Alex Narasta, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Senior immigration policy analyst at the Cato Institute. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. Download a podcast of the show. Find us on Facebook. Sign up for our listener Facebook page. And you can also tweet us and send us an email. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us.